Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. I'm Cliff.
Hello, and I'm Brett.
Oh, nice to see you, Brett. It's been
a
while.
Yes, nice to see you. It certainly has, hasn't it? Hey, I do like, Cliff, how just directly above your head, almost like Christ, you have that peg thing where you put the washing.
Yeah,
it's wonderful. So either you're Christ or you're some kind of Satanist. I can't work out some kind of Blair Witch creature.
It's white, so...
Still, though, the bones are white in the Blair Witch.
Force for good.
Is it? Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Well,
it's all right, isn't it?
It is all right, isn't it? It's a bit precarious. I mean, at any moment, it could, you know, get your head.
Like like a trap jaw?
Yeah. Like
trap jaw off
of He-Man. Yeah. Or is it off She-Ra? Who knows? Can't work it out, can we?
Yeah. Okay, I'll never get the bottom of that one. Brett, I've started watching
but
the
we'll still
new
try.
Frasier.
Have you? Mm-hmm. Why?
Just for something different, man. Just so it's not all murders.
Yeah, Cliff, did you like the original Frasier?
I like it, but I don't like it as much as I like Cheers.
Well, Cheers is probably the best American TV sitcom ever, isn't it?
Absolutely amazing. Love it. And obviously, he's
and Happy
good
Days, of course.
Happy Days is absolutely fucking terrible. It was good when you were small, but it's not a good show.
Yeah. Are you sure? When was the last time you watched Happy Days?
Yesterday.
14. You would have been 14. That's the last time everybody watched it. Didn't they? Hey, I mean, come on. There you go.
Well, I mean,
good
he's
theme
an
tune,
old man.
Yeah, the Cheers theme tune's class as well, though, isn't it?
Absolutely brilliant. Everything about it's brilliant. I love it. I love it.
We should do anyway, Cheers then.
We're not here to talk about Cheers today, though, are we?
Maybe it's next week. Who
we're
knows?
Here to talk about your love, first love, Hammer Horror.
Yes. I absolutely adore the Hammer films of all kinds because this isn't a horror, is it, Cliff?
No,
that's
it's
the thing
it's
about it.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's right up my street, this film.
Well, I knew you'd like it. I knew you'd like it, which is one of the reasons that I picked it. But I'd go through like 6 months where I don't watch a Hammer film, and then I just watch them all. So I've been buying them from various places, eBay and stuff like that. And getting the DVDs in. So I've been watching them.
Okay.
This one, the one that we're going to talk about, a film called Cash on Demand.
Lovely name.
It is a lovely name, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You could almost imagine it being some kind of game show hosted by who? Who would host it?
Or it a shop where I can buy somebody's old PS2.
Or that. Oh, that Dale Winton, he'd host it, wouldn't he? Oh, he's dead.
It would have to be an old game show, yeah.
Yeah, it would be, wouldn't it? Because of his deadness.
Because of his deadness, yeah.
But yes, so this is a one that I've seen once before, and I think it's in public domain, this one. So it's free to watch on YouTube. So that's how we watched it. So I've watched
it
on
a few places, yeah.
Yeah, it's quite expensive to buy on DVD, which is odd. You would think that things that are, you know, on public domain and stuff like that would be cheaper, wouldn't you, on DVD? But
well,
who knows?
It's from 1961.
It is indeed.
But it didn't come out for 2 years for some reason.
It came out in America before it came out here.
Okay.
Because I don't think Hammer knew what they had on their hands, knew that was, you know, how good it was. Really.
It's brilliant. It's not a noir, because there ain't detectives and femme fatales and all of that in there, but it's a thriller.
It's a
thriller that's set in like one room with a couple of people.
Yes.
There's it a little bit is. Of a supporting cast, but it's in a situation. It's set in a bank, and it's set in a bank on the 23rd of December. And even if you guess what's happening straight away, it's still fucking brilliant.
It is. Would you like a synopsis of the Cash
I'd love
and Demand?
I'd love it.
You'd love it. Of course you would. So Cash and Demand is a 1961 British crime thriller by Hammer Studios, in which a stern bank manager, Harry Fordyce, Fordyce, played by Peter Cushing, has his world turned upside down with the arrival of the charming and ruthless Colonel Gore Hepburn.
What a name that is.
Wonderful. Played by Andre Morel, who plans to rob the bank and also claims to have kidnapped Fordyce's wife and child.
It's basically a two-hander between those two contrasting characters.
Uh-huh.
One very prim and proper. He's a dick, isn't he? Peter Cushing.
Cushing is a complete dick.
He's an uptight. He's exactly what people used to say a bank manager. He's exactly what people thought about then.
He's the epitome of a bank manager.
Uh-huh. And he's uptight, a stickler for tiny little stupid rules. He's throws his weight around in his lofty position as a bank manager, and he's mean to his staff, and he pulls them up for all kinds of shit.
He does.
And he's just not, and it's Christmas. Brett, do you think this is a little bit like Scrooge?
No, I think it's a lot like Scrooge, Cliff.
Okay.
But I only realised that on second viewing, on this viewing, the first viewing, I had no idea. So it was almost like watching the film again for me. Okay. I mean, you've got it on first viewing. I didn't get that. I just thought it was a wonderful film. I mean, I'll watch anything. Peter Cushing is my favourite actor of all time. I'll watch
anything. Was he ever young, Brett?
I'm sure at one time he was, Cliff.
This is 1961. He's an old man in this.
Isn't he just so mint, though? Everything he's in, he elevates. So it doesn't matter if it's a schlocky horror film that he's in. It doesn't matter if it's this, which is pretty much a B-movie as well.
Mm-hmm.
He just elevates it. He just takes it to another level. Because, I mean, in this, he's the snotty bank manager. He's a stern bank manager. But his little mannerisms and stuff like that. Peter Cushing's very famous for using props and using his hands.
Mm-hmm.
He's always doing something.
Okay.
He's never
what
just
he's always
so
doing
much.
In this. He's always like kind of little stepping up on his toes a little bit. Like
he's an army officer. Yeah, he's straightening himself, and he's always straightening his tie to make sure that he's prim and proper, isn't he?
Yeah, and then when the pressure's on, he's loosening it, and his hair's ruffled and all of that, which is the opposite of his, what he wants to portray.
A Christmas film.
It is a Christmas film, yeah.
It is a Christmas film. I mean, obviously, it's got the Christmas Carol sort of connections there, which you very cleverly found out on first view, but I didn't. But yeah, it's a Christmas film. And we'll love Christmas films.
It starts with somebody dressed as a Santa collecting out for a charity outside the bank. And it feels like that's relevant in some way, but then it doesn't really happen again.
It did. I wrote my notes. Is he connected in this sort of mystery in some way? And if you have the sort of the Christmas Carol sort of connection with it, maybe he has, because maybe he's one of the ghosts.
But Brett, at the end, he definitely is. He says he is.
Who? The Santa outside?
Gore Peterson, whatever he's called. He says he is.
No, I'm talking about the Santa outside. Is the Santa outside one of the ghosts? Because he didn't say that he is. Because they don't. It's the Christmas Carol.
No, but I thought it. Well,
thing is
skipping,
an underlying thing is, throughout.
We're skipping to what happens at the end here, but when the crook, what's he called?
He's called Gore Hepburn, Cliff.
Gore Hepburn.
Yes.
When Gore Hepburn is explaining what's happening,
he says a throwaway line. No, he doesn't say that he's a ghost.
He says he's a ghost.
No, he says, well, where's the money gone? And he goes, well, or who took the money? Well, Father Christmas, maybe. That's what he says.
There's another line where he says, a voice, he says a tape recorder. He says, is it?
Yes.
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 So, yeah, he says this is like the.
He doesn't say
the
that.
Spirit
man.
Of Christmas in a tape recorder or something. He says, "How did you get me like voices and stuff?"
No, he's what he's been doing is slowly recording the telephone calls. I'm making this up between his wife or recording his wife and his son, and they've slowly sort of spliced that together. That's what he says.
Mm.
You've made that up, Mr. Clifford.
Well, I need to watch that bit again because I think he implies that Santa outside as the guy who's collecting the money is part of the like the reconnaissance team who's been helping them plot the heist.
Right. Well, the only bit that I got from that is that, oh, he says like, well, who's took the money? And he goes, well, maybe it's Father Christmas.
Okay. Well, but anyway, we'll skip mad ahead with two different theories of the film there.
We have.
So then Gore Hepburn, Andre Morel. I mean, honestly, this is one of the greatest performances I've ever seen in a film. It's absolutely amazing. What a character he is.
He is class, isn't he? Absolutely brilliant. Him and Peter Cushing were in Hound of the Baskervilles.
Okay.
Which was also a Hammer film. Peter Cushing was Sherlock Holmes, and he was Watson.
Okay,
and
great.
Morrell. So they're a bit of a double team, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely are. So this is set in a bank. Cushing's the manager. There's a small supporting cast of people outside. Some good people within that supporting cast as well.
Yes, particularly like Richard Vernon, who's Pearson. He's class. And obviously he's the Bob Cratchit of the of the sort of the outfit in the bank, isn't he? So he's the one sort of immediately as we start, they've made some kind of mistake in the bank, him and a younger clerk, haven't they? And Peter Cushing accuses them of embezzlement.
Embezzlement. I think he's like he's undercounted like the takings by a fiver or something.
Yeah, he's just
one
made
day.
A mistake.
And then the next day he's added that on and he's like, so...
So the person's then realised the mistake, brought the money back and they've corrected the books.
Yeah.
And he's still accusing them of embezzlement.
He's like, yeah, because you've used it to your ends for whatever reason. You're fiddling the books somehow. So Pearson, who's been there 11 years, he basically says he's going to sack him, but still continues to boss him around and talk to him like shit. Even though if I was Pearson, I would have been like, well, fuck you. I'm out of here.
I know. But he loves his job, does Pearson, doesn't he? And I mean, that's a terrible affront for him. He says, really I'll never get a job again in the banking world if you sack us. And Cushing's like, well, I'm
it sets up a few little ideas that maybe he might be behind some kind of robbery because there's some suggestion that there's money worries or trouble at home with him, and he's obviously there's also like proof that there's some kind of errors going on with the money coming in and out.
Maybe I just saw it as a simple mistake, and it's shown how ruthless Peter Cushing is.
I absolutely agree with that, but I think in terms of the film, it sets up the idea that maybe he's wants to take revenge on him, or he's
Do you think some... so? I didn't get that, Cliff. I didn't get that. But, you know, if you did that, that's fair enough.
I think it's kind
a different
of,
way of looking at it, I guess.
I think at the very beginning, when it starts, I'm like, maybe he's got something going on here. Mm-hmm. Because, or maybe he's somehow the guy who's helping feed the information to the colonel. Because the colonel turns up and he says, hello, I'm from the insurance underwriters of this bank, and I need to make sure that our assets are being looked after properly.
Yeah, the security of the bank, doesn't he? He's from the security services. He's there to check their security systems.
Yeah, so let me go and see the manager now. Uh-huh. So he gives him his ID, whatever it is, driving license or something, and he takes him in. And he takes him in to see the manager, and he's like, ha-ha, first mistake. You let me in to see you. I've got no fucking clue who I am. I could be trying to rob you or anything. But he's like he's colonel, so he's got very, like, upper-class, like, mannerisms. He's brilliant, and he's so confident, this guy, when he's talking to them. He's amazing. He's a total force of nature.
Isn't he?
And very charming as well. So even though he's, like, he's basically picking holes in them and having a go at, like, them being a bit shit. And it quickly turns out he is actually robbing them. He's doing
and immediately
style and
so he is. And immediately, because of his station, or so-called station, Cushion immediately sort of is on the back foot and respects him, doesn't he?
Yeah, he defers to him totally. It's quite pathetic.
He is in a way. I mean, he sort of rules the bank with an iron fist, doesn't he? But as soon as this other fella comes in, he's very quick to sort of service his needs or whatever he wants without really thinking about it. Whereas Pearson doesn't, because soon after this, Pearson tries to ring to confirm he is who he says he is.
Yeah.
But his call won't go through because it's Christmas and the lines are a bit bad and that.
Yeah. So, but to the young guy that says, like, if you want to get back in these good books, you better check and ring that he is who he says he is, because he'll come out and say, you should have done that. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, you messed up by letting us in, but the first thing you should have done when you went out was to check I was actually who I say I am. Uh-huh. And after a while, Pearson does it. And they only get the info right at the end, don't they?
Because he says he is. Because of the lines being down and all that kind of stuff, don't they? I mean, we have jumped quite a lot. Because one of my favourite things is the start, is the credits and stuff like that. Because it takes you through the bank, doesn't it? The vault. And I mean, it's wonderfully black and white and everything. I mean, if it was in colour, it wouldn't be as good, this one.
No, nothing. Like Jane was just saying, because she was watching a bit of it with us, and she was like, it's brilliant, that, isn't it? You just don't get films like that anymore, do you?
Where it's just
stylish men, like just talking to each other, being charming.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. That is basically what it is. I mean, it was adapted this from a teleplay,
you could see how it would work as a play. Even a play, not just a teleplay. You could see how it would work.
It definitely
as that.
Would, because it's a small setting. And it only cost Hammer £37,000 to make or whatever. I think the teleplay was called The Gold Inside. I think that's what it was called. But it's all about Andre Morel and Peter Cushing playing off. Well, not necessarily playing off, because Andre Morel is definitely the overpowering force in the whole
film. It's just a battle of wits, isn't it?
And it's about Cushing, his character just unraveling.
Yeah.
Throughout.
Yeah, Morel's
the stern guy in charge at the start, and he slowly just unravels, doesn't he?
Well, he's just grinding them down by sheer force of nature, and he's just got an answer for everything that Cushion's trying to do to, like, weasel out of it. So once they're left alone in the room together, it is quite quick when they're in the room, and it is quite quick before he says, right, you knobhead, I am robbing you, you idiot.
he does, doesn't he? He gets straight in there.
And then it's just, so Cushion's like, you can't do this, it's not happening. And he's like, well, you need to, like, give your wife a call and see whether you want to cooperate or not. And he rings the wife, he rings home, and his wife and kid are like, oh, you don't do whatever this, do whatever they say, don't do anything silly. So he's now living in fear. I beseech you. So he's now living in fear. That
hey, also Cliff. He does say he's got two electrodes attached to a head.
So. He's got, and a sharp current will run between them.
He's got a wonderful voice, hasn't he? Unreal.
Absolutely amazing. I love, like I say, it's one of my favorite performances I've ever seen. I loved it. So yeah, it's like not a very long film, about an hour and 15. And it's just Morell basically saying, this is what's going to happen and you will cooperate. And it all has to happen in this way. Otherwise, I'm going to put an electric charge through your wife's head.
But the tension, I mean, because it is such a small scale film, and it's like you say, it's like a play, the tension just ramps up and ramps up. Peter Cushing's got to have like a lot of credit for that, because most of like the acting's done in his face and stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
he slowly, like I say, he's slowly being broken down by Andrea Morell. He gets a bit of a slap to the chops.
Yeah, that's amazing. Point. He makes him take his glasses off and slaps him around the face.
He does. But
Morell's
just
undermining him all the way through. Like that
he is.
I think that's the point where he's just broken him. He's like voluntarily taking his glasses off so he can get slapped in the face.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
And I think that's the point where he's like, he's just, all right, I'll do what the fuck you say, but like, get out.
Well, that's what he does. He has to. He has to assist. He has to help Andre Morell rob the bank, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Because he's got, obviously, he's got his wife and his child.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's making signals and stuff like that at the window, which
the
is absolutely
so funny
brilliant.
At the end.
It's a big part of the film, isn't it?
Yeah,
when
so,
he makes a signal.
So
end.
Basically, there's a couple of bits where the tension does ramp up. There's a gun in the bank, I guess, for things like this.
Yeah, but I can't. Was going to ask you, Cliff, do you think that banks actually had guns in that? Because is that just a
done,
random thing that they put in?
They must have done, but it's a good bit, isn't it? Because the colonel comes out of the office and he sees Pearson with this gun and he has a little bit of panic on his face for a second. But Pearson's like, oh, I'm really sorry, we can't find the ammunition. It should be here somewhere. I'll try and find it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, Pearson comes in the room and he says, I found the ammunition. And it's about the time when you think he might have got the news to hear that he's not who he says he was when he first came in. And there's a couple of bits throughout it where you think Pearson might save the day here, or he might come in with a gun, or he's got the phone call and the police are on the way. And of course, that's kind of what happens towards the end, which really does for Dice.
It certainly does. I mean, the other, like I say, about the tension and stuff like that, it's like, Andre Morell is getting him to do various things in different stages. So he's getting him to speak to the staff, because he's got a car outside, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Which is quite an expensive car.
Yeah.
The car cost more than the film that he arrived in. I think it's worth 200 grand or something like that now, the car. But he's getting them to sort of, the staff to get bags out of his car, bring them in to the office where Peter Cushing is. And he's got books in the bag, so that they're quite heavy. And obviously that's how he's going to transport the money and stuff like that.
But he's like, you can tell that he's implicating them in this thing, right? Because he's making them bring the car around.
Hasn't he? Ultimately, he's just turned up, and through the power of his influence over Cushing, he's then suddenly just took over the whole bank, hasn't he? Just by him being there.
There's a great bit where he's sitting on his desk, Fordyce's desk, with his feet up, and he's drinking his whiskey. And Fordyce is in the close-up of the screen, and he's like unraveled, he's mopping his brow, he's losing it. And Morell has just fucking got his feet back drinking whiskey, and he's like, you need to invest more in your people, Fordyce. And he gives him a massive lecture. He's like, do you think I want to rob banks? It doesn't need to be ghastly. It doesn't need to be, nobody needs to get hurt. I've come for a reason. And he's like, look, these guys, they all want to do stuff for me, and they won't do a fucking thing for you, kind of thing. Because he's like, and I've only just turned up, and I'm the bad guy. Like, how shit must you be?
Yeah. Well, that's the Christmas Carol thing, isn't he? He's basically the ghost of Christmas Present.
Yeah.
And he's showing, or he's taking Cushion through these traumatic events to then realize how bad he treats other people. And eventually that kind of comes to the head in the end, I guess. But one of the good things I think about Andre Morales is when Cushion asks him, like, what's he there for? He says, well, Leo, what are you there for? Just some money.
Just some money. there's some great lines in it, and it's like I say, his performance is great. The bit where they come to empty the bank, he basically says, he tries to give him some money, doesn't he? Do you not want some? And he's like, oh, obviously not. Like, it's bad enough having to do this. And he slips some cash in his pocket when he's not looking.
He does.
Has a little cheeky wink to himself. And that is basically what part of what comes home to roost at the end. Because basically he gets away, right? And he says, you can't bring anyone for an hour. Otherwise, like, after an hour, I'll let your wife and kids go. But if anything happens before then, we'll kill them. And he says, like, after 10 minutes, you need to go to the window and mop your brow. And he's like, but make a display of it. And that then they'll know that it's the time's right. And he's how Cushion's doing it at the window. He's like someone off a Carry On film, the way he's doing it. He turns so camp.
He is.
Like,
he does turn all camp, doesn't he? The bit where they do actually empty the safe of the money, or the vault of the money, is also a wonderful ramping of sort of tension.
Yeah.
Because there's various alarms. There's the eye in the sky, I think, that they have to switch off, isn't there? And there's also Cushion forgets to lock the inner door.
Yeah.
And if he leaves it for 10 seconds or whatever, it'll automatically ring the police, which obviously he doesn't want to happen because he doesn't want his family to be killed.
Yeah.
And that's a wonderful bit as well, where it just ramps up the tension. It is.
And I think one of the things with it is when you get to that point, you realise he's the guy that's worried about the police coming at this point, not Andre Morel. Yeah. He's the one who's like basically doing the robbing of the bank and is like sweating over when the alarm goes off. And Morel's just like kind of, he's in total control, isn't he? Honestly, it's brilliant. We won't spoil the ending, but it comes home to roost for both of them. And it's quite an intriguing way. I was almost expecting an extra twist at the end somehow that didn't come. But maybe that's because of you're used to that with modern films and stuff.
Yeah.
But the end is still satisfying, I think.
It is. Initially, on first watch, I thought the ending was very sudden. But then when you realise the Christmas Carol connections, it all came together in my head. And I realised what was happening. But also, Cliff, you are a lover of films that happen in real time, aren't you?
This is happening in real time.
It keeps showing you the clock.
Yeah. I love
it. Because everything, wonderful thing.
So it's an hour and 15 minutes, and all the way through, Andre Morel's character is saying, like, at this time, you need to ring this person. When it gets to this point, that's when this is okay. So you're talking through the real time as well. And again, it helps with attention for a film like this, especially for a heist film where the clock is ticking on whether the alarm's going to go off, whether that person's going to walk in the room, whether they get to that Christmas party or not, and all of these kind of things. It just works perfectly, I think. So it was another box ticked for me with that. We're good.
It is. It's a bit of a gem in it, this one.
I'm surprised I never heard of it before, or I never heard anybody talk about it before. So thank you, Brett, for that. And as a result, I've done you a quiz about Hammers.
As a reward.
About Hammers, and I've taken on your thoughts from last time. So this is all a quiz about Hammers. We're running out of time, so it won't take long.
Okay.
West Ham United's nickname is what?
The Hammers, Cliff?
Yeah. Hammerhead Shark is so called because of?
It's Hammerhead.
Yeah. What is the fantasy space game that people play with little models that they have to paint and then play out?
Is it Warhammer?
It is Warhammer, yeah.
Warhammer? I can't do that. Definitely, no. Can you do that? Can you try?
No,
and do
I'm
it?
Not even going to try.
Warhammer. Warhammer.
What is the best thing to knock nails in with?
Hammers.
Hammers.
Not just one hammer.
What is the terrorist group being used as a smokescreen for Israel's genocide and atrocities in Palestine?
Hamas.
It is. That's all I'm going to say on that matter.
Okay. Yeah, we don't need to be getting into any of that shit, do we?
No. Right. Well done, Brett. You got 5 out of 5. That's a record. Maybe I'm cracking.
Julian Dix. That was me. I thought you were going to just ask us about Julian Dix.
We'll talk about him next time. Right, Brett. Yeah. We've got more music.
We do have more music, and this week it's from a Manchester band called The Juice.
Yeah, kind of good, isn't
it? Yeah, and it's pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good. Do you think they're named after O.J. Simpson? Probably not.
I hope so.
No, this is really good. This It's called Industrial Dreams.
It is. So let's take it away, The Juice. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High-quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Your personal info, like addresses, phone numbers, and more, are collected and sold by data brokers. But Aura steps in, scanning the web, sending you alerts, and requesting your info be removed. Get Aura's full toolkit, including credit and transaction monitoring, a password manager, VPN, and more. Get a 14-day free trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety.